Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. This week, we are joined by Alex Sandilands. He's actually from the UK originally, but he now lives in Santa Monica, California. Alex, it's good to have you on here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a real privilege to be here. So I hope I can impart something of some benefit to someone.
Of course, that's why we do it, and I'm sure you will. And for giving people a peek behind the curtain here, Alex and I tried to do this earlier on another day, and then the internet just absolutely did not want to do the podcast that day. So we have adjusted. So this is going to be kind of our second crack at it because we're partway through it. Alex, I want to give people just like, we're going to kind of fast forward slash kind of smash cut, if you will, through a lot of, you know, your background and everything else. We're going to kind of skip over that and just go into the fact that at one point you used Trainer Road, you listened to the podcast, you used Trainer Road, and you got to 4.8 watts per kilogram, which most people listening to this would be like, oh my goodness, I would do unspeakable things to reach 4.8 watts per kilogram. It's, in other words, it's a very high achievement for people. But at 4.8 watts per kilogram, everything wasn't okay for you. And so can you break down what happened, how you recognized it, and what the problems were?
Sure. The only belt I'd add is before I started with Trainer Road, I was really big into running and, you know, competing, you know, just at an amateur level, but I loved it and was really into the science of running, you know, as well as the history of the sport. And I had a few injury things, and so eventually I went to cycling. And so when I found Trainer Road, it was like, you know, it was like candy for me, because I was just like, this is great. You know, it's so in detail. I can train even more because, you know, it doesn't beat you up as much on the bike, I just mean. Mm-hmm. The structure, the podcast, so what you're doing in training then is relatable to the podcast. So, yeah, I was just like a massive, you know, convert. I promise I'm not actually being paid by Trainer Road to say. I was like training super hard and, you know, had what the nice progression that I think a lot of people sometimes, if they've done a bit of running or swimming, or, you know, sometimes have, where you've got a bit of a base of endurance, so your numbers aren't super good straight away, but once you kind of, you know, your muscles or your neuromuscular system adapts, and you can escalate quite quickly. So it was quite easy for me to, I have no genetic talent, incidentally. I'm just like completely average, but just very obsessive. Jumped up pretty quick to quite high. And I think I actually probably did hit 5 watts per kilogram, but I wasn't like testing, as it were. I was just doing certain workouts and I was like, that didn't feel like a 0.9. Anyway, I decided to get back into running when I moved to LA because the weather is so much better. And my Trainer Road training took a backseat, but I was still doing it. So I ended up doing like double days. So I'd be, you know, training for an hour in the morning, Trainer Road, and then running for an hour in the afternoon. And I was like, I feel fine. It's great. But I hadn't quite clocked, I think, like really the energy expenditure. Mm-hmm. And I honestly felt fine and everything was going great. And I was doing more and more running and I was out on my kind of long run. You kind of tend to have like a long run, like a long ride. And I noticed like my hip was hurting a bit. And it kind of hurt more, but everything hurts in running. So you're just like,
yeah,
it's fine. And this was in the middle of COVID. So I didn't have a phone. I didn't have like a mask on me. So I was like, well, kind of going to have to just run back. And I managed to get back. I think I ran 18, 19 miles. And I actually just couldn't walk. I really could. You know, typical runners like finish the run. It was like, yeah, I'm fine, good. Oh, PR as well. And then I was like, oh, I can't walk. It'll be fine. It's probably sore. I'll foam roll it.
And, yeah.
Anyway, that was what happened. So I went to get it checked, And I worked with because as I said, it was right in the middle of the pandemic here. And I spoke to an amazing physio who I can't recommend enough virtually, called Brad Beer. He's a very accomplished triathlete himself over at Pogo Physio in Australia. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I think you might have a stress fracture. And so I was like, oh, I've heard this happens to runners, you know, it's par for the course. But I was confused because I hadn't like changed my training a lot. Anyway, I went to the doctor. You can only diagnose it with a MRI, had an MRI, and the results really were very shocking to me because I did have a stress fracture, which I'd kind of made my peace with. But the other kind of report or bullet point was that it kind of revealed that I was kind of said, you know, it's either severe starvation, typically associated with anorexia, or basically a metabolic condition that means you're kind of dying, like you're wasting away. So the muscles had all started to atrophy, and it was essentially my bone marrow was starting to, your body starts to kind of break down those things to get energy. Mm. And I was pretty shocked. And, you know, the doctor came in and was like, look, you know, do you have an eating disorder? And I was like, no. And they were like, do you monitor your food? And I was like, well, yeah, a bit, because, you know, like mm-hmm. many of us do.
Sure.
And it really threw into question everything I was doing, because I was like, wait, is this normal what I'm doing? Because, you know, with a lot of people who mm-hmm. say aren't endurance athletes, it might not seem normal to have like a scale for your food, right? Or to scan a barcode. But, you know, on one side, it's great because then we know why we're doing it. But then it made me really think, oh, what am I doing to myself? You know, and then my testosterone was, you know, non-existent. And, you know, luckily I went for DEXA, and luckily my actual bone density wasn't too bad, because obviously you can kind of make yourself osteopenic, and you know you only need to listen to the you know, the reports from the annual health checkups from the guys. It was on the podcast the other day, and the Ineos riders, and all their bone density is like, you know,
way low. Yeah,
it's like borderline osteopenic, because it's and you are, you know, that's a calculation that they're willing to make, right?
Which is crazy, you know.
It is crazy, because especially when you think, well, a, you know, myself, I'm like, I do it mainly for myself. I'm not like, you know, even if I have won a race, it doesn't really mean anything, because there could be just someone faster who turns up, you know. It's not like mm-hmm. at the highest any national or international level.
And you're not paid to do it, right? Like the majority of us listen to this podcast.
In fact, I pay a lot of money to do it.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Right, the opposite. But yeah, you do kind of think, you know, I guess one of the beauty of, you know, sometimes with running and definitely with cycling, we all think, I'm sure we all have those moments where we're like, do you know what's so great about this? It's like, realistically, I might not be as fast, but I could do this until I'm very, very old. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. then you think, yeah, but when I'm very, very old, I don't want to like trip over and break my leg.
Yes.
Really. And yeah, so I just, after that happened, I spoke to a dietitian, and some of the stuff I think would be good to share, because it really opened my, eyes into certain calorific demands that I wasn't aware of. And I say this not in a complete Pontus way, because I really did take care of it, and I thought I was matching everything, and I was really, you know, had body fat scales, I was trying not to lose weight, I was like mm-hmm. actively, it's not like I was just like not paying attention to it.
Sure.
But yeah, I've definitely tried to make a lot of changes, because you do start thinking about you know, your long-term health perspective.
Sure. What did you, when you spoke with that nutritionist, or worked with a nutritionist, I should say, what things did you learn? You mentioned the calorie demands that you were just not recognizing. You thought that you were balancing the equation. What things weren't you recognizing?
Yeah. Well, two things. I think it's important is if you're in that position, I do think, and this isn't in any way meant to put down the term nutritionist at all. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a big difference between a dietitian, a registered dietitian, and a nutritionist, because, you know, they have like a medical degree.
Yeah.
And so I worked with, I had a few calls with someone, and I'd done a lot of research before about Red S and low energy availability. And it's something sometimes you don't really pay attention to, because you're like, well, I don't feel tired, you know, mm-hmm. so I'm clearly don't have this. But I clearly did have it because of my MRI. But one of the things is, I think that it's a little bit easy sometimes to think, okay, this is my rough, resting rate, right, for my weight and height. And I know you guys have had them. And honestly, the things online do correlate to if you get a test, because I've done it as well.
Yeah, surprisingly, at least in my case as well, I can say surprisingly close.
Yeah, I mean, it's a few, like maybe 80, 50, you know, mm-hmm. and that's within the margin of error of like, you know, how much turkey you eat, you know.
Right. Yeah, totally.
But just do that then plus your workout. And then if I eat that, it all equals out. I thought was like, great, that's science. But right. I guess the thing is, I think that the metric, and this isn't from me, I must say, this is like, I believe there's a document we can link to, but there's a kind of IOC consensus statement, which is basically when they get all these top people in the world of sports science and nutrition, and they kind of all met and came up with this statement and about Red S. And one of the things was energy demands, and the important equation, as it were, is fat-free mass, because you can have two people at, say, 150 pounds and think that the BMR is the same. But if one person is like 25% body fat and the other person is 6, your calorie, it demands way more fuel.
Yes.
And they found in female athletes, if they fell below 32 kilocalories per kilogram of fat-free mass, they almost became, you know, lost their menstrual function, bone health issues, performance declines, and that 42 calories, I think it was 42 or 45, but it will be in the document, was what you needed. Obviously, that wasn't for males, but when I just even put those back of an envelope calculations, and I was like, I went for a DEXA, and I had like 6% body fat, which is obviously not good at all. Well, it's not good to do that for 3 years.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Yep.
But when I kind of worked that out, I was like, okay, so this is my fat-free mass. And this is, I was so far off. I mean, I was like so far off. Mm. I was kind of, it was like a bit of a sick in your stomach moment, because I was like, yikes.
Realize you've been doing this wrong the whole time. And suddenly
felt very stupid, actually. I know that sounds silly, but like, I was like, oh. Well, like, you kick yourself kind of thing.
Yeah, because you mentioned the fact that like you feel like you're measuring it and doing it well. You didn't notice any like huge like energy deficiency. You didn't notice that. And that's that's a situation that I'm sure a lot of us kind of go up against at times when we're trying to try to balance on that thin line of, okay, I'm feeling just enough. Knowing what just enough is, you know, we tell ourselves that the calories on the package and then the basal metabolic rate plus whatever we've burned during when we train. Okay, that's all we have to do. But it isn't quite that simple, right? And it sometimes it's really hard to recognize those signs. So how did you adjust your diet thereafter? Like, yeah, what did it look like then, before and then after? Like, what did you add to it?
Yeah, well, one thing I think that is very wise about what you just said is that I'm not trying to like overcomplicate everything. And sorry, I'm going to come to that in just a sec, but
sure.
I'm not trying to say everyone, oh, I bought a bike. Now I need to get a DEXA and like get my body fat and measure. Like, I'm not saying that, but I do think that I think it's quite good to think, and this isn't like patting myself or yourself on the butt. Like, I'm not trying to do that, but I'm saying, if you're getting to, like, as you guys refer to, a bell curve, and it's like, look, I'm not Grand Tour rider, but I'm also aware that, you know, if you're getting up in the high fours and fives, you're fairly, you're taking it seriously, most likely. And that, it's not extraordinary in terms of, you know, like Pogacar or like that or sure. Roglic, but it's like, it is extraordinary compared to the average person. And if you're going to, I don't want to sound like I'm quoting like the Lance Armstrong defense of extraordinary results to extraordinary accusations. Yeah, yeah. But sure. Actually what I have to say is if you're doing extraordinary like demands, like training 12 to 14 hours a week indoors, then the other bits need to be kind of extraordinary as well. Like the fueling, you know what I mean? So you do need to take care of it because you can't just be like, oh, well, I'll do all that. And then I'll just like carry on as normal.
Yeah, sure. Well said.
So that's why I think it's not just obsessive. It's like important because you're trying to do something out of the ordinary, I guess. So one thing I really started doing was big things, I guess, were I'd say number one, fueling workouts. And I know I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I still listen back constantly to quick clips of the podcast just to remind myself of the importance of it, because I was definitely someone who found that I could get by without doing it. Mm-hmm. And kind of saw that as a bit of a badge of honor, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's strange how we do that. It's like a natural thing for us, for all of us. Probably listening to this, we can all relate to, yeah, well, I don't have to do that, so I'm not going to do it. And then when we do something and we're like, I just did that on one bottle of water, for some reason we're proud of ourselves. And like,
yeah,
really,
and it's a
weird
agree.
Thing. Yeah.
It is weird, but I also think in some ways it's quite natural because if you become so obsessed in cycling, or it does apply to running as well, but we become so obsessed, not in a bad way, everyone, this probably two numbers, right? Your your power and your watts per kg. And it feels so good when you bump them up. And that feeling of like bumping a number up.
Yes.
Is why we do it. So it's also not surprising to me that when you get on the scale and you're like, oh, like it's a bit lower, that you also go, yes. Do you know what I mean? Because
you
think that somehow you're kind of training your mind to see these things as like helping each other. Whereas the power going up, like, probably is a good thing, but it's hard to think of either the weight going down or being like, oh, I didn't take in any calories this ride, as like somehow also a victory.
And the hard thing is, well, and actually it makes perfect sense when we think of it this way. If you use just a vehicle analogy, it would be absurd for us to be like, I just drove all the way to your house on empty. Yes. Like,
yeah.
You know, like we would think that
it's... I love it when you said, I think you said once, and I only say this because it stick. I think the only reason I say I can remember all this stuff podcast is because it hits home of something very personal you've done. You know, if there's like, you talk about like mountain bike tire clearance, I've forgotten it because I don't mountain bike, right?
Sure.
But if, I think you said something like, you know, you wouldn't like, you don't just put loads of petrol in your car when it's like just at you're not about to do a long ride. You know what I mean? Like, totally. You don't wait till it's like just about to be empty. The good feeling in your car is like, thank God I've got enough fuel. Thank God. Like, sorry, because right. Like, you know what I mean? Thank goodness I've got enough fuel. Right.
Totally.
And so, yeah, it's funny. So I started just being like, I'm never going to not eat something before I ride.
Awesome.
Yeah, ever. Even if it's early in the morning, because honestly, I went through a stage, and this is meant to be a sign of idiocy, not heroics or boasting. But I went through a stage in 2020 where I did like January to April, and I did a sweet spot workout every single morning for 90 minutes on nothing, because I was like, oh, it's not too difficult. And then I can run it. I'll run in the afternoon. And it's like, it's not too demanding.
Because it's like, sweet spot and sub threshold in your mind, you're saying it's not too.
Yeah. And also I wasn't doing like half hour intervals. I was doing like, you know, like Garabi or something, which is like, you know, 4 minute increments. So it's like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. It's fine. I don't need to eat anything. And then I'll be like, I'll have a big bowl of oatmeal afterwards. And you know what? If you can have a massive bowl of oatmeal, like I, you know, kind of Nate-sized portion. And and it's just nowhere. It's not going to put in like what you've just expended. You know, if your power is relatively high,
right?
As it were. So I just started being like, it's an easy ride, you know. I'll have like, you know, I'll just have like a couple of bananas or some honey or something, you know, just like I did that this morning. And then if it's a hard ride, it's like I get up early, like I think a lot of people, and, you know, ride at 5:30, 6. And I'm just like, well, here's some gels, here's some mix, here's some other mix. And just I started doing 40 and then, you know, try pushing up to 50 and 60. And that's probably where I am at the moment of grams.
And 60 of grams. Now. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Grams of carbohydrate.
And straight away afterwards, recovery shake. You know, after hard days, after easy days, always a protein shake as well. And that, I mean, you just have to try it because it feels, I know you guys have said it, but what's so good is, yes, it's still hard, but it's just, it doesn't make it less hard. It's just like, you can just keep, somehow you can just like keep doing it. And you're like, I got to the end of Sweet Spot Base Mid Volume 2, which some of your listeners, I'm sure, will know. It's like, you have a really good combo of Lamarck and then Le Conti and then Wright Peak. And I hit within 5 weeks when I started really getting in that block, I went up like 15 watts because I hadn't done that block whilst fueling properly before.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was doing the content. I was like, I mean, it's difficult, but I was pretty chilling. Like, I don't, because you just, also, I think psychologically, you just go, oh, a bit tired, grab a drink. And that association of not, of being like, oh, I'm a bit tired, I'll grab some energy. Mm-hmm. It's really helped. And then I think working, you know, if you're doing a lot of training, what, you know, what is, and maybe you are logging your food, and but what's wrong with, you know, one appointment with a registered dietitian, you know, is compared to what you might spend on a pair of bib shorts, it is like nothing, you know, to try it out. And so I'd really recommend that. I think really eating more, fuel and workouts. The other thing is, and I still struggle with this, if I'm being completely honest to some extent, is nutrient dense and calorie dense.
Mm.
It's super easy to be feeling like you're doing it really well and you have this massive bowl of like kale and lean protein and vegetables. And, you know, it's delicious and you eat a lot of it and you feel really satiated. And then maybe you have some Greek yogurt and some berries and like, you're like, oh, I'm so full. I'm so like, this is great. But it's difficult because it's, you know, you're eating so much like fiber and water that you do feel really, really full.
Mm-hmm.
But that huge bowl of food that you've just consumed could be 600 calories.
Yeah. Takes you about 10 times longer to eat all of that than it does a 600 calorie, like, hamburger thing of French fries or something like that.
Yeah.
It's really, you bring up something that's really important, that nutrient dense and calorie dense. It's tricky to hit both.
So difficult.
Yeah. And because the thing, and we, so like, to give people an example of what that looks like, calorie dense, it's really easy to be calorie dense when you reach for like typical snacks. So chips, cookies, all that sort of stuff, right? The quick and easy stuff.
Ice cream. It's ice like cream. You can eat a pint of ice cream and not be full. Like really, because I mean, it's not going to fill you up. And it's like 1600 calories, maybe some,
yeah,
you know?
Gives you a huge amount of calories, but not a lot of nutrients. And for us, in terms of long-term health and short-term health and performance, we know that a greater variety of nutrients and also high nutrient density is going to be beneficial for our health. But it's truly hard enough if you're getting to the point where you're a high-volume athlete, you have a reasonably high FTP, it's truly hard to balance out when you're just eating nutrient-dense, not calorie dense foods. Like it can be really hard for people to be able to hit that.
Yeah, because I think we all do the right things. And I one thing that I think is that I wanted to mention whilst we are having this discussion is I think that it's really difficult for all of us who want to achieve something, whether it just be go up 5 watts or maybe it's lose loads of pounds, because I don't want to sound like someone who's like, oh, boo hoo, you've got 6% body fat. You know what I mean? I'm
sure,
not trying to say like, oh, like, oh, poor you, you hit, like, you've got a high FTP. Or like, because I don't, like, it's not about that at all. But what I think is hard is that we do operate, all of us, I think, to some extent, you know, if you are a Training Road subscriber, probably, in a bit of a spectrum where you're like, I'm doing this for performance and this is why I'm counting my calories and this is why I'm obsessive or this is why I have to go to bed by this time and not go out because I got this right. And I think it is important to have a dialogue with people who are like yourself, like ourselves, but also people who aren't, who we still really get on with, like, you know, maybe various family members. Because I think I find that if you go too far one way, it shifts your perspective too much. So I find that I can still shift easily some feelings of being like, oh, I can't eat that. You know, I mean, it's like the thing of like birthday cake at your best friend's party. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, okay, if you've got a massive goal in 2 weeks that you've been peaking for and training for, you know, a series of months, but if you're just in the middle of sustained power build and someone offers you some ice cream and you're like, I can't do that, then I actually think that that's the point where you're being irrational because it is actually going to make no difference to you.
Correct.
At all. And that's where the more obsessive tendencies that we all feel can slip in.
It's that baseline shift. That's an interesting point that you mentioned. It's our feelings don't change, but unless we have regular points of reference and kind of like a course correction in place, then our baseline shifts.
Yes.
And then we start to lose perspective on it. Because that's totally been me. Like,
so true.
I remember one year I was like, I'm not eating a single French fry from here, which was right after my A event, until next year at that A event, right? And I was like, I'm just not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm not eating those things. I'm not doing any of that. And it honestly was, I had shifted my baseline so far away from balanced or rational that I got to the point where really it was like not only causing negative effects in my life, but also in my family's life too, because you know, my wife would be like, hey, I'm going to go grab dinner. I'm going to get these things. Do you want it? oh wait, I can't get that for you. I've got to think about something else. And I've got to go. And it's like, you know, and don't get me wrong, not saying that that's bad, because like you said, there are certain situations where that might be what you want to do and what is rational, right? But it's when I lost baseline of that. It didn't matter for me for a whole year to be sticking to that. It really didn't. And the benefit of this that you're talking about is when you feel like you're always running close to the limit, you have no wiggle room. You basically have like no, like on a motorcycle, there's this reserve tank that you can flip to, right? So if your gas tank runs out and you have a reserve switch, you flip it to that and you have a little bit more. So then you can get by in those rare circumstances where you truly are pushed past your limit. And if we're always trying to run it right to the limit, we all know that life is an unpredictable beast and it will throw all sorts of things at us. Yeah. So then if we don't have that reserve tank, then we find ourselves really in a hole. And the reserve tank is psychological as much as it is physical too, because if you're always running yourself to that line, it's just something small can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And then at that point, you know, we're in shambles.
Yeah. And I really applaud you for saying that. What you just said about the French fry, because I think that, you know, you guys have a platform, and because there's hours of, you know, it's all very well for someone like me to say it, but like I don't really have the, you know, the backlog to like support it. So I think the conversations you're starting, I think you're having more frequently on the podcast about lots of issues, by the way, but especially that, because obviously it pertained to me. So, but what you just said, I think it makes it more, I think it's really important, because I think it makes it more okay to say it if we've all done that. Because I think this thing of like, oh, he's got an eating disorder. It's like, no, it's like there's it's a continuum. There may be signs of disordered eating, but that's not the same as eating disorder. And most people that I encounter, whether they're endurance athletes or not, it's very rare nowadays that I meet. Now I'm more aware of it, and I'm guilty of it as well, incidentally. Mm-hmm. Where I say something or I hear someone say something, where you're not a bit like, that's a bit crazy. Isn't that a bit crazy? Like, isn't? But I've done stuff like that too. Like you just said, it's like you develop a fear, and yes, of course. Like if you're really training for something, of course, because it's in the same way that, you know, you are committed to doing a workout when it really hurts that you don't have some fries, right? But it's like you said, when it becomes just a non-negotiable factor, I think it's a real trap for, and I'm not trying to classify you because I know you've got high ambitions as amateur, but Geraint Thomas has started a podcast, right? And I was listening to it the other day. And all those guys, they cannot wait for that I was listening to. I really recommend, actually. Just been up, cannot wait for the season to end. I just want to eat. And the problem that I think sometimes we all fall into is it's just this continuous, no one's telling us. We don't have a whole team and infrastructure around us telling us what to do. So our season just becomes like 5 years long. Yeah. Like, I never want to see my body fat go up. Why would you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, I never want I did that. I was like, okay, well, now I've got it, I'm never letting it go down. And when I see a higher number, I still think, oh, just but you know, like, of course, you're going to, because it's like if your FTP went down, you know what I mean? You'd be like, oh, I just really want to get it back up. But like that lack of periodization, I think, put me, and maybe hopefully some this will resonate with someone, especially when there are no races on the calendar, or, you know, we're not going to go to a race a lot of the time and achieve our goal, right? Just that's life. And when we don't, we double down a lot of the time, or we get, because we don't be like, okay, well, now this is the off season, then we're doing that. And some people do that really well, but by the sounds of it, you were similar to what I've done, where you're like, you can also win your race and go, you know, get a new PR, and you go, well, just imagine if now I didn't put olive oil in anything.
Right. Yes, that's like the big temptation, right? Is that you start to pinpoint it on a specific food, even where you say that.
Oh yeah,
that We've is the it. Cause. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
and it's so far from that. The reality is that we're much more complex than we try to boil it down to. So in cycling, we have this benefit, right, of having power measurement, and it's honestly almost entirely unique in terms of sport.
Definitely.
Be able to quantify so closely the energy demands of what you're doing. And when you can do that, there's this constant that you have that you can plug into equations now. So suddenly you start to feel like, well, I'm in control of everything, and I can control every, I can plug this into an equation and suddenly I unlock everything. Mm. But we extrapolate that ability to tightly measure that energy expenditure to everything else. And in doing so, we are incorrect. We make error because we believe that, okay, well, if I can measure my power at this precision, that also means that I can measure everything else, whether it's rest, whether it's the nutrient variety and calorie value of food, all the other energy expenditure in our lives that we don't have a power meter to measure. But we tell ourselves that, okay, that's this. So A plus B equals C. Good. I've got it. It's not that way. And we can measure power, and then yes, we can get calories from that. But even then, it's still not a perfect measurement of exactly everything that you're doing, especially,
Yes.
mountain bike, gravel, and then all the other time that you're spending off the bike as well.
And I'm that's in a way when I was running and what happened, I'm actually like very grateful for it because I could have kept going thinking I was getting it right. And I guess what I also want to really share is I didn't have a performance decrease. Mm. Like I didn't, but I think if you're doing a lot of training, and like what's a lot, I know, like, but you know what I mean? If you're
sure,
if you're aware that, cause I was only training indoors, cause when I moved here, I didn't want to, I don't know, think about the roads in LA and health insurance as a foreigner. Like, I don't know. I just didn't want to chance it. And like, if you're doing, 10, 12, 14 hours indoors and then running as well. It's like, I'm lucky that I was running. So something really went wrong because otherwise I would have just kept going for ages. And one thing that's crazy is since then I restored, I guess, a lot of weight. It was crazy because people start saying to you like, oh, you look really well. Mm. I had a really big dietitian say this the other day. It's got a great platform. She's big in the UK, and she was talking about when people say they look well, and it is because you look kind of like healthy, mm-hmm. like in a very real sense. Like I'm sure we've all seen riders or runners, and we can recognize in our own faces. Sometimes you're like, oh, I've just got a bit too, oh, it's fine. But then you see someone else and you go, gosh, they really do look quite emaciated. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it is tricky. But I think the positive is that I think awareness, that's the big positive thing. It's like to have these conversations and for you guys with your platform to have these conversations. And I know there's lots of other issues as well, but obviously power, within cycling, like we think about power to weight a lot, and it's great. We all talk about weight a lot, but it's also, and it's great because it can help people lose weight, right, as well. But mm-hmm. it also, like anything, there can be another side that, like I said at the beginning, we were discussing, you don't want it to affect your actual like health. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly. Because and you can feel like you're a long way off from that. But one positive, I guess, is I put on weight. What was really interesting is I started looking, I'm not vain aesthetically, I don't care. Otherwise I wouldn't be cycling. You know what I mean? Like
I would, it's a good check like, for all of us, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah.
But But one thing that was interesting is you start to look like when you're in better energy balance, you start to look more muscular, I guess, because you're not like trying to store fat.
Yes.
Desperately to survive. You know what I mean? So you look better. And one thing that you guys mentioned last week, although I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but was a complete lightning bolt. And it's definitely the way I think now is, I mean, I don't weigh myself as much anymore because I find it, I just don't see the benefit in that personally at the moment, but I check more body composition, like, and look at that. But I was just like, I'm about 5 to 10 watts. I can't do the ramp test, sadly. I'm one of those people who it just doesn't work for me. Like, not in a disparaging way,
Sure.
Huge Training Road fan, but it just never gives me the, which is why I'm very excited for adaptive training. But I know I'm about 5 to 10 watts off right now, hitting 5 watts per kilogram again at probably about a stone heavier. In fact, maybe even more. Like, I think I was about 129, 130 pounds at like 5'11", you know, which is, and I'm like, what's crazy about all that weight gain is if you're still training really hard and trying to eat, you know, healthy, you know what I mean? Sure. Nutrient dense food that you prepare yourself, that food is, you don't really see it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see like, oh, I've suddenly got like loads of
fat deposits. It doesn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what happens. That was a really weird switch for me mentally. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, cause you were like, oh, but I won't. But suddenly you're like, well, kind of, it's the same, but it's like suddenly your numbers are so much better. And like to be able to, what I was trying to say to be concise is that how great is it to be able to try and achieve the same, a better way to think about it is like, why don't I try and weigh as much as I can and have the same power ratio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it makes you a much more capable cyclist, a much more healthy human, one that isn't run so close to the lines. It improves performance
when I started, because when I started riding and I did a few group rides after training hard, I'd tell exactly what happened is back in the UK, we don't have very long climbs, but I tried to go on some group rides, right? And I know this sounds awful, but I knew that I was probably training more than everyone else. Mm-hmm. Like I was training more than everyone else. And every single hill, I'd just be chatting and just like, no one would stand a chance. Maybe one rider who was like going all out, but they wouldn't stand a chance because of that. And then I couldn't keep up on any flat section at all, any descent. Just like, and I just used to honestly drop out the group rides and go and ride by myself for 5 hours because I was like, I can't hit that power for 5 minutes because my, you know what I mean? Like when they're all drafting and in a pace line, I'm putting out, I don't know. I'm reluctant to say what, because I feel like it's somewhat
relative,
irrelevant. Do you know what I mean? It's all the same. It hurts the same. But my FTP, I'd be like 130% of FTP. And I was like, I can't
hold.
No way I can do that. Whereas now I'm like, even I hit a solid week of power PRs last week, which is kind of crazy. Like, I couldn't really believe it. After so many hours of training run, I couldn't believe that I was still just knocking out a week of power PRs.
Yeah.
I was so surprised. I was just like, wow, if I can really do this and like, you know, weigh more than you, weigh as much as you can and keep the same like body composition for health. I'm not talking about like 5-6%, maybe a bit higher, and like, and think about it for your health, not so much the weight, but you know, because if you're eating those bowls of nutrient dense food and try and put some more calorific dense food in them, it's like the weight just, I mean, I'm sure you've had it, but your water weight just fluctuates like
crazy. Yeah.
4 or 5 pounds a day. And it's kind of like, whereas your body composition is about to Matt Turek, I think.
Certainly.
And then, yeah, so.
Something, so a few key things I'm noticing. Number one, now you are eating more than you were before. You're still eating nutrient dense, but you're finding calorie dense things to be able to add in as you can. You're fueling your workouts, which I find a really cool way to look at that is you're doing similar work than you were doing before, but now you're getting more from the same work because you're giving your body the fuel that it needs. So that's what's making it, that's what's making an improvement. All of this is leading to the fact, and of course, all of these decisions help your psyche as well, just in general. Mm. But all of this is leading to you nearing 5 watts per kilogram, if you're not already there right now, but you're doing it at a higher weight and a higher power. Thus, you're a more capable rider and
considerably, considerably higher. I'm talking like, I know, so as I said, I'm not vain. This isn't meant to sound static, but you could probably, I'm fairly lean. Like, I don't even like the word lean, but you know what I mean? Like, so, but I've put on like 14 to 15 pounds. So what I mean by that is, yeah, you can do it. And I think one, sorry, to go back to your question is from earlier, because I didn't feel like I gave it enough of an answer, is if you like the sensation, and for some reason I do like the sensation of having a big bowl of really nutrient-dense food, right? Mm-hmm. I just do. I don't, it doesn't matter if you love eating, you know, burgers or chips, whatever. If you want to put loads of dressing, whatever, do your thing. But personally, I love that like freshness and like, and such a good way to then not be in a pickle and be like, I'm going to have to, is to try and just find other things that you like that have a lot. Like, I love, I don't want to be controversial here on the banana gate here, Jonathan, but I'm all for a berry speckled banana frozen. Has to be frozen. And like, I can eat like 6 of those frozen bananas, like not in the skin, but, and then fueling your workout, right? And then like, you know, I'm still not as good as you guys at getting 90 to 100, but if I hit 60 grams an hour and then hit a good recovery shake and then say a couple of frozen bananas, even that recovery window is probably 500 to 600 calories. Mm-hmm. And then you've tried to take on, I don't know, like a fair bit, you can do the math, sure, in that. And like that way, as you've said before, it just means, yeah, you can still get to the end of the day and be like, oh, I am a little bit down where I should be, but it's not anywhere like I was before because you just put more fuel into the workout, which realistically is the best time to, well, not the best time, but it's a very optimal time to put that stuff in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yes. Into your system. Yeah. So that's really helped with, but I do think it's balancing act of the nutrient dense, and especially because we're surrounded by pictures. I don't want to sound like, oh, social media, blah, blah, blah. Sure. But we are surrounded by pictures of like, you don't see very normal meals on social media. You either see triple stack cheeseburgers deep fried in a Mars bar cake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or you see, oh, I've just made this thing out of beetroot.
Yeah, exactly. It's one or the other.
Coconut aminos. There's no like, so you, it's easy to just be like, oh, I give up, or like, oh, I've got to do this. You don't see a kind of like, oh, this is like, you know, here's my bowl of pasta.
Yeah, exactly. this has been an awesome conversation, Alex. Thanks for having this. And I think that one thing you brought up in the beginning that I want to just run back to is you mentioned Garrett Thomas and his podcast, but you mentioned that like athletes that are just so eager to eat and all this stuff. And I hope that what this podcast has done is helped all of us sit back and reflect on it, not with a guilt casting finger pointed to each of us, but instead help us go, okay, where am I at in terms of how I feel with all of this? How am I carrying all of this sort of weird and complex relationship that us cyclists have with food and performance,
and admitting it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is I feel a great deal of empathy with what you said. Sorry, I wasn't trying to interrupt, but I think it's so good to like be like, not we're complete freaks. which we can seem like to some family members. They're like, no, I mean, I've got an amazing family. I'm just saying friends and family, like it's not that my family are very supportive, but to be like, why are you doing this? It's like, we know why we're doing it. But like you said, to just take a step back sometimes, and it's so easy to do when you're by yourself, but this conversation with you, even speaking to a fellow, someone who's very keen, you know, it makes one feel like exactly what you just said, just a moment of like checking. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but like,
yeah, I think the final thing that I wanted to say with this is that because we see athletes like, you know, Geraint Thomas or all these pro athletes that we get to see, and in cycling, it's a little weird because we kind of do exactly what they do. We just don't do as much of it or as high of an intensity, but cycling is weird in the sense that you can go out and do what they do. It's similarly to running, but even more different because the technique is kind of the same because you're on the bike. And so there's less technical aspect to it. We can really kind of do what the pros do. So there's this temptation to let the baseline of pro athletes decide where our baseline should be. And then there's the temptation that we see from the world of a very, you know, having no necessary standards or anything else around, you know, what you take into your body, how you think about your personal health, all of that. So these really polarized ends of the spectrum, but we probably fit somewhere in between there. And it's okay to move within that. And it's okay to not be perfect with it. And perfect is really like a direction in which you head rather than an actual achievement and a point on that timeline. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this, about an athlete that, you know, was feeling like you're doing everything right. And then you have a course correction and then you make adjustments. And as a result, you've found more health and more performance, because that's really what this whole thing is about. So I really appreciate it. Alex, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, I mean, I am on social media, but I don't, honestly, I have it for my secret work life, which is in music, but that's like separate thing. But I do have a personal one that anyone can reach out, but I literally just follow like 3,000 like different things that I'm interested in and never really post.
Okay.
But either on the forum or Strava, you can link below if you want to see just loads of pictures of training row workouts.
Awesome. That's
which is it. Yeah, but I am on Instagram, but I kind of like, I'd always reply to someone because I love to talk about this stuff. I think it's Sandy Lands. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate your input as well, because I think, like I said, you guys have got a platform and I think it's important to talk about all these issues. But because weight is such a big, because weight, I'd say more than power, can impact your health.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful that I realized it. But the last thing I'd say is I do think it's a journey for all of us. Like, I don't think we just go, cool, tick that box, now I'm fine. Some people can, but I think we're always going to be like, realize that it's a sliding scale of us striving to perform in our work, in our training, in whatever it may be. And so many of those things are great, great traits.
Mm-hmm.
But they also just slip so quickly into like, you know, negative traits. And so I admire some people so much who are just so good at striking a balance.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not one of those, but I think the journey is to try and get balance by having these conversations.
And balance isn't a fixed point. Balance is a constantly evolving thing. You know, that's for sure. Well, thanks a bunch, Alex. If you're listening to this podcast right now or watching it on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, give it a thumbs up. If you're listening on the podcast, you can rate this and share it with your friends. It would be awesome. And if you want to come on the podcast and share any level of success that you feel like Trainer Road has helped you achieve, I would love to hear from you. You can do so. Go to trainerroad.com/SAP and you can go there and enter that in. I would love to hear from you. So once again, whether that's you've won a race or whether that's doing something like in this case, like Alex has found a course correction in managing his health with training, which is something that relates to all of us and a huge success as well. please send it over. I'd appreciate it. So with that, Alex, thanks a bunch, and we'll talk to everybody next time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alex.